Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hi, and welcome to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight we're continuing our micro-series episodes on estate planning, and we're going to be looking at buying and selling in and out of a estate or a revocable trust. And once again, as always, here is our host, Bob Howe.
Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome everyone to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe. And as always, we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. As Jason mentioned, we have embarked on a series of micro topics, and today we have chosen the topic of revocable or revocable trusts. And that's sort of like a potato or potato, depending on who you're chatting with at the moment. But as just a little intro and a reminder to some folks who may not remember or know what trusts are, a colleague of mine once described a trust as an empty box. There is a document, you know, sometimes 5 to sometimes 50 pages long, that creates a document called a trust, and essentially it's an empty box at the end of the drafting, and it's up for the attorneys and the people involved in who wanted to make the trust to put stuff into it. So into that box, one of the things that we usually put in is, or that people usually want put in, is a house, all right? And we're talking about revocable trusts. Now, there's another kind of trust called irrevocable. Irrevocable, of course, means you can't change most of the time, but occasionally you can. But revocable or irrevocable trust, you can always change. You can put stuff in. You can take stuff out. You can sell stuff that's in it and take it out. You can sell stuff that's in it and keep the proceeds or whatever you bargained for in there. So it's really a pretty flexible, you know, document. And it's a document that you create during your lifetime that becomes effective during your lifetime. You go see an attorney or someone who's knows how to draft trust, they make a document, and it becomes effective almost immediately. Of course, once again, with this box analogy, you could leave the box empty forever if you decided, geez, I really don't want to put anything in there, but, you know, let me keep it around just in case. Or you decide, you know, a year or two in the future, you did want to put stuff into it. You could put stuff into it then. Really, the preferable thing to do is put stuff in as soon as it's made, because procrastinating isn't good for anybody. Is that right, Jason?
That's absolutely right.
Don't put off for tomorrow or next year what you can do, like, right
now.
What's
the saying? Why do today what you can put off till tomorrow?
Yeah, well, that's the other version of it, yes. And what is your take on what are you hearing as a layperson, Jason, in terms of, doing trusts and putting houses in them and whatnot?
Well, a little confusing, because I've seen it, quote, referred to as a living trust and also as a will substitute, the types of will substitutes. And I was wondering, to bring this up to ask you, how many will substitutes are there? Why would someone need a will substitute? What's the benefit of a replicable trust versus a run-of-the-mill will?
So that's a good question. There are what they call testamentary substitutes. Testamentary means will substitutes, as you refer to. It could be anything from a trust that we're talking about right now to maybe putting your name on an account as payable upon death or in trust for, or putting your name on as A and B, Bob and Jason. You know, it could be as simple as that. Those are testamentary substitutes, which means you don't need the will to have it pass from A to B. You've either specified A and B, A in trust for B, or A payable upon death to B. So those are testamentary substitutes. And you do bring up a good question. Why? And we're going to talk about some of the pros and cons of this as we get a little further along. But a couple of things happened over the last couple of years that I think have made trust a little more popular. Now, trust, I would dare say, in the Northeast, probably aren't all that popular. Whereas if you go down to southern states, Florida, for instance, Florida is everybody has a trust. It's sort of like not leaving your house without your cell phone or your wallet or your car keys. You know, everybody has a trust. And, down there, trust, as you mentioned, are testamentary substitutes. It means you don't need a will and you don't need to go to court. All right? So a couple of things happened, at least in the Northeast, over the last couple of years. One, of course, was COVID. COVID basically shut down the courts, all right? Nobody expected, them to be shut down, but they were shut down. So if you had a will and it said everything to my friend Jason, couldn't do anything about it. You just held on to it until the courts opened up. Of course, when the courts opened up, they hadn't been doing anything for months or years, so guess what? Mm-hmm. They're backed up. Then you hear stories, which a lot of people have heard, courts are backed up months to a year at a time. So if you had a will that said everything to Jason would have to wait at least a year or so to get that will probated, which means approved by the court, and then be able to collect his assets. So the one thing about trusts, those became popular. Why? Because you create them while you're alive with a lawyer, and you don't need any court involvement, either in making them or in putting stuff into them or in taking stuff out either while you're alive or after you pass away. So if you had a trust during COVID and the courts were closed, it really didn't have any effect or minimal effect on you passing, assets to whoever, you wanted. But I think we might have gotten just a touch beyond ourselves. I want to go back a little and just indicate what the components of a trust are. And I did want to also mention, lawyers have a way of naming things with a misleading sort of you know, name like a living trust. Well, a living trust is a trust that you make, and it's effective immediately. It's like forming a corporation or a limited liability corporation. They don't call those living corporations or living limited liability partnerships or corporations. They just call it what it is. Somewhere along the line, people started adding words like living trust, and that's, you know, basically just plain old trust. I don't think you necessarily need the word trust living before it, but, you know, it does get confusing. So in any event, let's talk about the components of this box. Someone has to make that box. Well, technically a lawyer should assist in making that box, but the person who really makes that box is a person called the grantor or the creator. He or she is the person that decides, hey, I have this house that I want to put into this box, so if anything happens to me, it's much easier for my beneficiaries, you know, to have it transferred into their names. So then you have the grantor who makes it. You have a person called a trustee. The trustee is the manager of it. So, you know, I could appoint Jason if I'm the grantor, I could appoint Jason the trustee of my trust, which means you would run it, actually. You'd sign paperwork for it. You'd pay taxes for it, not you personally, but you would, you know, you would do whatever a person would need to do with regard to, owning a property. And then the third person is a person called beneficiaries. So Bob makes the will. Bob says Jason is the trustee. And in the trust it says, Jason, if I'm not around, if me, the grantor, is not around, then I want it to go to my four children, A, B, C, and D. So those are all of the players in this scenario of a trust. And I just want to put it out there that actually the grantor, the trustee, and the beneficiary could all be the same to further confuse people. But most of the time there is some separation there. But they could be three different, or they could be three of the same, sort of like the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, depending on which religion you've been raised in. And so the grantor, say, would put his house into the trust, usually just for economy's sake, at least in a revocable trust. They would make themselves also the trustee. So Bob would have a trust created as the grantor, and Bob would put his house into it as the grantor, and then there would be a beneficiary, which are probably Bob's spouse and Bob's children. And that all taken together, and you'd actually do a deed. You'd do a deed from Bob's individual name into usually the revocable trust of Bob, or the living trust of Bob, or just Bob's trust. And that would actually get the ownership out of Bob's name individually and put it into the trust. The trust would own it. So if you looked at a deed, it would say Bob's trust, not Bob's house. And then, you know, you'd live with it for decades or however long the person who created it, you know, survived, pass away. So I don't want to be that person anymore, so we're going to make it somebody else. So that other person would pass away, and you would look at the document and say, okay, what's going to happen when this person's not around? And the document would say to their children. So the trustee, who is a different person because that person's alive, would then execute on the terms of the trust and put the house out of the trust name into the children's names. And, you know, people always also think that once you put something into a trust, you got to keep it in the trust. Well, at least in a revocable trust situation, that's not the case. You could put houses in, you could take houses out, you could sell houses, you could buy houses, put them in there. But the person now who's really doing all the dealing is the trustee, the business manager, you know, of the estate.
From the sound of what you're describing, it sounds more fluid than, say, a will. Is that the case, or is it not so much?
It is pretty fluid. It's very little, if no, court involvement whatsoever. It usually comes down to, if you were selling a house, the title company would look at the trust to make sure that it conformed to what they needed to see, all right? In a rare occasion, say people who were involved in the trust were unhappy with each other. Well, maybe then you could end up in court and ask a surrogate, hey, you know, so-and-so has been running this operation, not giving us either any money or any explanation of what's coming in or what's going out. But you do mention a very good point, and that's why trusts are becoming more popular, is because they avoid probate. And it also is sort of a secretive type of thing, whereas with a will, you file it down in court, and you can access some of those records. So you could see in my will, if I'm not around, who I left my property to. A trust isn't that way. There is some secrecy to the trust. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to leave it to friends of mine or charities or organizations, no one really know that, because it's all in the trust and it's relatively secretive, unlike a will situation. So there are some good points about, you know, making trusts. Wondering if you had heard any negatives or positives about friends of yours that may have been involved with trusts.
I haven't heard anything negative or positive, but it did come to mind that one negative could be that because they're so fluid and there's no court involved, that whoever's controlling it could change it, you know, by on a dime, on any whim, daily.
Exactly. So it's that secretive of a document. And right, I could probably, if I have a trust, you know, one day I take the page out that says I leave everything to Jason and put in I leave everything to Mary. And nobody would really know it, right? The other thing, the nefarious type of thing I could do is somebody and sort of use some undue influence on me and say, you know, look, Bob, if you don't leave me everything, I'm taking you to this lawyer and you better tell that lawyer, you know, to leave everything to me. And if you don't, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. I'm not going to help you with shopping or day-to-day activities or stuff. So, you know, there is some duress that could be. And, you know, getting back to the secretive part, there could also be, see, with a will, I tell people, you know, some people think will is a four-letter word, and while it is, it's not a bad four-letter word, because it does come under the scrutiny of the court. And when it comes under the scrutiny of the court, what does the court want to know? The court wants to know if all the close family members have been notified, all right? Mm-hmm. In a will, in a trust, no one really knows that. If the trust says everything to Mary and Mary's not a blood relative of mine, then, you know, other people who might have been blood relatives of mine will never get notice and never know of how, you know, Mary ended up with all my property. And Mary could be a very good person, or Mary could be a scheming, you know, gold digger. and the people who really should have benefited from my estate, meaning my, you know, generally your family, might not. So the secrecy is both good and bad. Like most things in life, there are positives and negatives. One negative, you know, if you contrast wills and trust, is generally people talk about the upfront cost. So in a will situation, wills generally inexpensive to draw. They sit there dormant for 10, 20, 30, 50 years until the person passes away, and then you retain an attorney, and the attorney could have a substantial amount of work to do, finding relatives, finding witnesses, marshaling assets, making sure all the taxes are paid. So that's going to be an expense later on versus drafting a trust, which could be a little bit of an expensive document. However, at the end of it, when the person passes away, don't have to go back to a lawyer necessarily. It says in the will, when so-and-so is not around, then to this person. And if it's a house, the title company just looks at the trust document and determines that it's valid, and that you know, the person who created wanted to benefit one or several people, you know. So one of the knocks against revocable trust or any kind of trust is their upfront cost. But once again, you have the upfront cost, you don't have any back end cost. Wills, small front end, larger back end usually. And sometimes, you know, there is another positive I think we should mention with a trust. You know, getting back to this whole secrecy thing, and you don't have to notify all the family members, et cetera. Sometimes people pass away with few, if any, relatives. You know, so you've heard these cases where someone gets notified that a relative of yours passed away and has, you know, in your, and you're going to be a distributee, meaning a beneficiary of that estate. And you say, geez, I haven't seen Uncle Joe in like 50 years, but Uncle Joe passed away and didn't have a wife, didn't have children, didn't have brothers and sisters, and maybe only had cousins. And darn it, you were one of the cousins. So, you know, you could inherit that way. But if you can't find relatives, the easier way to get around having to try to find them is just to do a trust. When you have a trust, if you say everything to Mary, very few of any people say, well, what about, you know, cousins and nieces and nephews or stuff like that. If it says everything to Mary, pretty much a done deal. So there are a lot of benefits, some negatives to it. I don't know if you have any questions after I've sort of confused you all with a dozen terms, but then I wouldn't be a lawyer if you could understand it easily.
Well, I think you answered a couple of ones that I had coming into this. My only one would be, you know, since we've talked about the trust of being a type of a will substitute, are there any other types of will substitutes that we haven't touched on or we have never mentioned?
Well, the easiest ones is where you and I go to the bank together, we open up an account, and we put ourselves on as Bob and Jason. You know, something happens to one of us, the other person gets it automatically. If, however, you and I go to the bank and the money's really mine, but I want to leave it to you after I'm not around, I would say something like, I'm going to open the account in my name, but payable upon death to Jason, or use the words in trust for Jason. So those are kind of testamentary substitutes. Other testamentary type substitutes, life insurance. So we all know that you have to designate a beneficiary. Generally, you designate a person's name, Joe, Jim, Mary, whoever. You could theoretically name your trust as the beneficiary or your estate as the beneficiary, but that sort of then it was unclogged. Now you put it back into that clogging type of situation. Whereas if you said, you know, I have a life insurance policy and when I'm not around, Jason's going to get it, rather than make a designation on my life insurance that says, you know, when I'm not around, my trust is going to get it or my will is going to get it. And then in my will or in my trust, it says, and Jason's going to get it. So that's sort of like a two-step type of thing that's unnecessary. So testamentary substitutes are when you do stuff while you're alive that happen automatically after you pass away. Don't see a lawyer. Don't go to the judge. Don't have to do anything. Just show a death certificate and you collect them then afterwards.
Could I potentially name someone else's trust as a beneficiary and say I have my own trust, and for the beneficiary, maybe I don't have any kids, but I have nieces and nephews who have a trust. Could I name their trust as a beneficiary?
Yeah, absolutely. That's done all the time. The alternative would be you make your own trust, but why do that when you can say, you know, I give it to my nephew into his trust, you know, type of thing. So, yes, you could benefit into somebody else's trust. You could probably also do it into a charity also if you, you know, sometimes put it into a trust that's created that does charitable type of work, you know. So, yes, you could.
That I have heard and that I do. I do know some people who have done that, who have set up a trust that designates a charity as the beneficiary.
Yeah. Well, that's also a good thing, too. And once again, you can leave property just about to whoever you want, except, of course, in a husband-wife situation. There's a little different rules for that. But as a general rule, you don't have to leave property to anybody. You could spend it all. You could give it all away to charity. You could give it to a friend from grammar school. You don't necessarily have to give it to your kids. And there are some people who don't give it to their kids because they realize that sometimes giving it to your kids is going to cause, like, you know, why did he get so much? Why didn't I get as much? Or I should have gotten more. Or, you know, so who has some sort of an issue with, you know, the other family members. So sometimes it's mostly good to have money, but sometimes it's not good to have money.
Well, this was interesting because I this is a topic that, you know, we have discussed and gone over a lot of estate planning. Trusts have never really been something we've dug too deep into. So there's a lot of things that I picked up from today that I had never knew before.
Yeah, and there's still a few more that I probably didn't have time to mention. I always advise people to consult with an attorney and ask all the questions you want.
Well, we've come to the end of another episode in our estate planning series, definitely a good one. So stay tuned for our next How's New York, and we'll see you then.
Yes, and this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to Jason for setting this up. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good morning, a good afternoon, and a good night. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying.